Welcome to the Glenelg Hopkins CMA's podcast series on Landcare Leaders, where we're talking to landholders and community members who've invested in landcare in their local area and are now reaping the biodiversity benefits. In this episode, we meet first-generation farmers Mauna and Jeff Semmons, who live south of Mount Napier in the Hamilton region of southwest Victoria. Mauna and Jeff bought a stony block of land covered in bracken that had, by all accounts, winds that blew from one end to the other, with the aim of giving their children a grounded upbringing. 30 years later, they've become local leaders in landcare who drove the need for a local facilitator. They're now experts in all sorts of techniques to try and get trees to grow in challenging landscapes, including how to use a crowbar, and have a crop-producing wattle plantation. They've also created a productive farm landscape, which leaves a sustainable legacy for the future.
My name's Mauna Semmons. Jeff and I together have been here since 1989, farming this rocky, stony barrier country, crazy, difficult country.
Yes. South of Mount Napier.
And we're now in our late 60s, looking back and enjoying what we've done and still sometimes thinking of what next challenge we want. But
well, thank you very much for having us here today. We've just had a farm tour, and it's really inspirational what you've been able to achieve in your lifetime here. You've actually transformed an amazing landscape, bare hands, meter by meter. Tell us a bit about the farm that you have here and what it means to you.
Well, it's about just over 900 acres. We came here as quite naive raw farmers. Neither of us grew up on the land, and I think we just wanted a place for our family to grow up where they could have some challenges, learn how the value of hard work, and transform the country a little bit into something that was a legacy for the future, really, to just transform it into making it a healthy, productive, sustainable farm that looked great and felt great. That's what we've done, and we've certainly had our challenges along the way, as all farmers do, but I think we've just forged on, really. That's just what we do.
It was a typical Western District place where the wind blew from one end to the other, and a couple of years people lost thousands and thousands of stock off shears, and people started to work out we needed trees and shelter, and apart from the fact that protecting birds and wildlife. So we started a long-term tree planting program, and we ended up forming a landcare group at Penshurst, which amalgamated a number of groups over there, and we were in the Gazette one, and which is still running, which is good. And we did a lot of tree planting, and we did bulk buys for fencing materials and bulk buys for chemicals through the landcare group for several years, and did an awful lot of work. And we even paid our own coordinator for a number of years, long before the CMA got their act together. Now they have. It's great. The coordination assistance for landcare groups has been great now. But we were sort of a bit ahead of the curve originally when we employed someone ourselves.
And I think being part of the community as newcomers into the community meant that we actually had to make friends and seek local knowledge. So maybe that was partly why we were always quite engaged with the landcare movement, because it was a way of connecting into a pretty
established area.
Yeah, it was a very established area, and we were newcomers, and we had a lot to learn, and we did learn a lot from local farmers, and we made friends for life,
we brought a different skill set and a different attitude to farming from some of the locals, and we've managed to struggle through in spite of that, I guess.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about the soil type. It's quite an extreme landscape here. Tell us a bit about the farm that you bought and what you've been doing here.
It's hard and it's brutal because it's very stony. You know, it's a volcanic area, so we're quite close to Mount Napier, which is apparently one of the most recently active volcanoes in southwest Victoria. So, there's bouldery stone and rubbly stone, and it's nice warm country. It it starts off early and it dries off early. So it comes with its own challenges. So planting trees in that sort of setting, a lot of people probably wouldn't have even entertained the idea, but because we wanted shelter and we wanted biodiversity, we just experimented with crowbar, really, and
very successful.
And we worked out that with a crowbar you could actually dig a hole and plant a tube stock, and they grew. They grew really well. We had to plant them very early. A lot of people don't plant trees till spring. But we found that if we planted them in June, then that gave them a really good established period of cold, wet weather.
Let their roots follow the water down through the soil, which is pretty stony, a lot of scoria type stone and bluestone. But if you do it early and protect them from hares and magpies and everything else with a small tree guard, we managed to get a really high percentage survival rate.
Yeah.
And just kept doing it as we could find the money. Over the years, some of them were subsidised through the state government land care grants. The CMA distributes it. Some years they had some money available, some years there didn't seem to be any money available. But once people got interested, particularly through the land care groups, many people did it without grants. It was a great encouragement. But if it wasn't available, people tend to do quite a bit on their own.
I think one of the things that, looking back, that really motivated us to keep going with the plan was that we did a whole farm plan earlier on, and that included what we wanted our farm to look like. It talked about succession issues. It talked about, four
plan.
Or five goals. And so water and trees were probably always at the top of our list.
And you've planted tens, perhaps hundreds of thousands of trees here, I'd imagine. What sort of trees have you planted and in what configurations? You've put shelter belts in, but you've also have dedicated wattle plantations for seed. You've really gone over and beyond where most people go with their plantations.
We've always done the wider plantations because we feel that gives a much better wind protection to our stock. And if you're going to fence it off, and it costs you the same for the fence, so just put as many trees in as possible. We've always looked at coordinating and fitting into the local land care goal of trying to create a biodiversity link between Mount Napier and Mount Rouse. So we've looked at the local other adjoining farms, worked out where their plantations either already exist or are going to exist. So that there was always some way that our plantations would connect to the neighbours' plantations, which would connect to a bit further along. So there was a sort of community-driven goal as well as our own personal goal about where we chose to plant those trees. And then one of the other key motivators was if there was a paddock that had no stock in it, no wind protection already for our stock, we would prioritise that. If it was on a boundary where we had neighbours, then we would often
double fence
that out as well.
Partly due to lice problems.
Yeah, with previous neighbours.
If you have a double fence, you've avoided the problem.
Yep. So there were those sort of motivators. And then in 2019, we by chance had learned about wattles as a component of a shelter belt, but that could potentially give us native food. And we thought, why not? Give it a go. We can plant trees. We'll see how they go. And so that's been a really interesting learning curve because we've had to learn how to harvest them, how to prune them, how to market them, how to cook them, how to eat them. That's opened us up to another community of people who are keen on biodiversity, sustainability, and
native
foods that are grown in a really sustainable way, where they don't need water, they don't need fertilizer, they don't need spray. They just grow. You just put them in, and they grow. And if you get the good genetic stock and you manage them well, there's another whole food source. When we prune, the cattle love it. They love all the foliage that comes off, and they're nitrogen fixing trees as well. So
they've done a good job for us.
What could go wrong?
Multiple benefits. It strikes me that you've been very open to new ways of thinking and discovering new people and new communities as well, with that.
Absolutely.
So you really, I think you said you bought this property in the late 80s?
1989.
And not coming from a farming background yourselves. You've really sort of come in with much more sort of an open approach than most traditional farmers. Would you say that's been part of your success here with managing this landscape?
Possibly, slightly. You could say we're a bit naive to start with. We had some background in farming activities, but never had any great amount of land, or family didn't have a great amount of land. So we had to learn a lot. We both had other jobs, and we both did those other jobs for quite a few years while running the farm as well.
And we're both social animals, so yeah, if you move into a newer environment and you meet new people and you're interested in what they do, everyone's got a story to tell and you can learn from everyone, really. So, yeah, it is interesting. We've actually got friends now all around Australia that we've met from different purposes. We've gone away for a holiday on a farming tour and we've got some really good friends now that we go and help them, even though they're a bit older than us and they're still actively farming, and we go and help them with their land marking, and they come and look at our trees and help us with a few jobs. So, yeah, it's I guess we are interested in people and how they approach different challenges in their life. So,
but your working life on this farm has really been about stones and trees. I mean, it is quite extraordinary the amount the transition that you've the transformation of this landscape from an incredibly rocky outcrop. You know, it looks a bit like Mars before. Is that what it was like when you arrived and you transformed it to pastures? So your relationship with this landscape is quite extraordinary.
It's fairly deep. We came here and it was covered in rocks, the old joke, rocks, reptiles and rabbits. But there was an awful lot of bracken fern, and you couldn't see the ground anyway. Mm. So we've done a lot of work on bracken confel. We've done a lot of work on rabbit control through rabbit cluster programs we've been involved with, and we've actually got rid of them, which has been a long-term activity.
So it has a much softer environment now. It's a nicer feel, if you like, and it's safer to work in too, because you can see where you're going and the stock are safer. They've got more protection when there's terrible winds or driving rain, so
people come here sometimes in winter and they see the cattle sitting on the ground and they go, what are they on the ground for? They're full. They don't need to eat all day just to stay warm.
Mm.
So they save a lot in food by having the warmth and the protection.
What's been your relationship? You obviously have had a very strong relationship with Landcare, and so much so that you've actually been able to employ and been quite innovative in terms of your approach to young farmers and introducing them to Landcare. What's been your association with the Catchment Management Authority?
They've been great. I think we've built relationships with various people there, and we've always found them really supportive and interested in new ideas. And
they've encouraged us at the time.
They've been open too. Like, if they know that there's actually only a certain amount of money that's going to be released, they're honest about that. They say, look, you know, apply. There'll be way more applications than there will be successful applicants, but put your hat in the ring, really. And it's been helpful. It's been something that is very handy when you do get extra money through whatever grant might be open at the time. But even if there hasn't been a grant, if you put the thought into, well, where would we put this? Where would this money be best well spent in terms of trees? You sort of go ahead anyway, because you just go back to your original farm plan and think, what do I really want to achieve here? And if I get a bit of help along the way from the CMA, well, that's great. They've got specialist expertise as well. At one stage, we had a couple of people come and look at some of the bush on our place, and they were identifying weeds and various species of trees that we didn't really know what they were. So they were really helpful from that perspective. Mm. And putting us in connection with other land care groups to say, have a talk to them. This is what they're doing there. Being on their mailing list so that you can see what other activities other land care groups are doing, whether it's a drone work day or a special speaker or they've always been really helpful. Helpful.
The CMA has employed a coordinator who looks after four or five or six different land care groups or entities, and that's been really good into holding the things together. and it being a common source for information, not just grants, but information about what's going on, how to look after spiny rush, how to combat invasive plants or weeds, rabbits, fox work, fox off campaigns. So we've been involved in quite a lot of things over the years through the CMA helping the land care groups.
Hmm. They've also been really helpful. A few years ago, we ran a really big wattle event over a weekend, and we had people from all over Australia coming, scientists and all sorts of specialty folk, and they were really fantastic in terms of using their links with Indigenous groups to show us how we could engage those communities and work together. So they had great connections, which was really helpful for our weekend.
Fantastic. Well, once again, thank you very much for having us on today. It's been an absolute pleasure to see what you've done to your farm over the last
36 something years.
Yeah. Congratulations on what you've been able to achieve. It's been an incredible amount of hard work. Anyone that comes here can see just the dogged persistence that you've transformed this place. So congratulations, and thank you very much for having us today, and all the best for the future.
Absolute
thanks.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Marius. Well, you're a farmer. You've seen what it's like too, so you've got a pretty good idea on what's going on.
Thanks for your kind words. That's fantastic.
Mona and Jeff have certainly earned their stripes when it comes to understanding what works from a revegetation perspective on a very challenging landscape. Our thanks to Marius Cumming, who's conducted this series of podcast interviews for the Glenelg Hopkin CMA. You can find out more about Landcare and the other local Landcare leaders being showcased as part of this series by visiting our website at ghcma.vic.gov.au, or you can find them by following us on any of the main social media channels.